Okay. We're on the final agenda item, besides other business, but we're on the final agenda item of our three-day meeting, which is Atlantic Sea Scallop. Before I turn it over to Sally and Deirdre, I just want to say again what I said this morning, which is that we do need to leave the room at 5 p.m. because there's another function that's happening here tonight. So we'll take prudent measures to get through our agenda. Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All the materials for the scallop discussion are behind tab 4, so everyone should have that in front of them. There were several additional items that were distributed this morning for the scallop discussion, so everyone should have a PowerPoint presentation that Deirdre will go through on Endangered Species Act and a couple of correspondence that were received by the council after the mailing went out. So all the documents we'll be using are behind tab 4. The committee last met on November 3rd, and the focus of that meeting was largely to discuss a response to the turtle biological opinion that was developed pursuant to the Endangered Species Act. The committee spent a good chunk of time at this meeting, as it had at previous meetings, discussing what an appropriate response would be to have the council and the sea scallop fishery be in compliance with ESA with respect to potential impacts on a number of species of sea turtles. There was also discussion at the committee meeting about alternatives for annual catch limits. It was the first time that the committee had discussed this. We have nothing to bring forward to the council at this time on that issue, since it was the first time that the committee had even addressed this in the context of Amendment 15. And lastly, we discussed at the committee meeting the range of alternatives that's currently under consideration in Amendment 15, and have recommendations for the council to consider to narrow the field of what will be considered in Amendment 15. Actions today that the council may take are related to the NIMS biological opinion for the sea scallop fishery relating to sea turtle interactions, and again, reviewing the list of alternatives under consideration for Amendment 15. Everyone should take a look at document 1 is the timeline for the three different scallop actions that are going to be, that are either underway or will shortly be underway, so that you can just refresh yourself as to the range of actions that the council has to take with respect to the scallop fishery. Document 2 is the existing draft for Amendment 15, which is in the very early stages of development. As you look through that, you'll see that there are many areas that are still in need of development. Document 3 and 4 are meeting summaries from the PDT and the Scallop Committee. Document 4 is a document I'll be working from quite a bit. It's the last Scallop Committee meeting summary and includes a number of motions that'll be brought forward today. There's also at the back of tab 4 a number of correspondence, mostly relating to the sea turtle biological opinion. And then there are two letters relating to permit stacking that were received by the council. In addition to the issues that were on the committee meeting agenda, there was extensive discussion of permit stacking at the last committee meeting. It was not on the published agenda for the last committee meeting, but during public comment at that meeting, a number of members of the public expressed their opposition to permit stacking. This was an issue that was identified during scoping for this amendment that the public wanted to consider as a means to address excess capacity and that the council has agreed to consider. It's an approach that the council has been pursuing to address excess capacity in the fishery and is one of the three stated goals for Amendment 15. This is an issue, that being permit stacking, that everyone will remember that the council addressed at our last full council meeting when the council voted to move to the considered and rejected portion of the Amendment 15 document, the alternative that would allow unlimited stacking. So that is an action that was taken by the full council at the last council meeting, just a reminder, to move that alternative to considered but rejected, so that will not be further developed. Just a note and reminder that there are currently two stacking alternatives that are now under consideration for development in the Amendment 15 document. The first, obviously, is status quo, which would mean no stacking. The second is to allow one-time stacking of a total of two permits. So one-time stacking for a total of two permits. Additionally, and very much related to this issue, there are alternatives that are in the very early stages of development to adjust for fishing power to compensate and ensure that increased effort does not result from stacking. So I just wanted to lay that out for everyone. It was a discussion that kind of permeated the committee meeting. The committee does not have any recommendations on this further than what the action that the council took at its last meeting, which I've already described. So as I mentioned, document four, the committee meeting summary, is what I'm largely going to be working from. And I will note again that the chair of the Mid-Atlantic Council it served on the Scallop Committee before he was elected as chair and has agreed to continue to serve on that committee. So we're having ample input from the Mid-Atlantic on development of measures related to the scallop fishery. I'm going to just talk just very briefly about the turtle biological opinion and then turn it over to Deirdre because she's going to be able to give a much clearer explanation of a topic that the committee has spent a lot of time at its most recent meeting and at the last three meetings, I believe, discussing. But I'll just give you, in a nutshell, the PDT was basically helping the committee figure out what threshold to use to determine if a change in the fishery to comply with the Endangered Species Act with respect to the impact on endangered sea turtle species is more than minor. The PDT analysis that Deirdre's going to go through showed that shifting effort to accommodate and avoid sea turtles is expected to actually increase fishing mortality as vessels attempt to catch more scallops, which will be smaller in size, to make up for the loss in meat weight during the more robust summer months when they would be limited in the southern extent of the fishery to avoid sea turtles. So you can see why I'm going to turn this over to Deirdre so she can explain this. Based on the discussion of the metric for determining if a change in the fishery is in fact more than minor, the committee discussed various aspects of the biological opinion terms and conditions. And so after Deirdre goes through her presentation on the biological opinion, then I will offer a series of motions related to that. And with that, I would turn it over to Deirdre, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Sally. Good afternoon. The presentation I'm going to go through is document number 7. It was handed out this morning, and it's basically a summary of the decision document number 5, which is a main summary of the biological opinion, the PDT's analyses, and the committee input so far. So you might want to have those two handy. So the, let me get this remote here. NIMS completed what we're going to call the Turtle Biological Opinion on March 14th, 2008. They forwarded it to the council, and since that time, the PDT has pretty much had two full PDT meetings to discuss this opinion, and the committee has met at least a half a day for three different meetings, different occasions from that point until now. Document 5, as I said, is a summary of the main findings of the biological opinion. It is a pretty hefty document that I'm not going to pretend to get through all of today. I really only have a few of the key slides to show you the main conclusions and findings from the opinion that we need to focus on in terms of the council's job today. Then I'll describe the PDT analyses that Sally was referring to and their input to the committee. And finally, there were, I believe, five separate committee motions related to the opinion. We also received, as Sally pointed out, it's kind of upped since this slide was made, 7 out of 8 of all of the correspondence you received for this meeting have to do with the turtle biological opinion, so you may want to refer to those as well. So, in summary, Section 2 of the document that we've prepared, document number 5, describes the background of the biological opinion and its main findings. Just to take a few steps back, since the council doesn't normally get into the details of this type of document and analysis, I'll just kind of take a few steps backwards and explain the main requirements. Under the Endangered Species Act, each federal agency shall ensure that any action by that agency is not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of endangered or threatened species or their habitat. For the scallop fishery in this region, this is the fifth biological opinion that has been prepared since 2003. The main reasons that they have been reinitiated has been pretty much because new information is available to warrant a relook at the existing biological opinion. The overall conclusion of this recent biological opinion is that the scallop fishery may adversely affect, but is not likely to jeopardize, the continued existence of 4 sea turtle species in this region. When that finding is made, the Endangered Species Act then requires that an incidental take statement be prepared, which is basically an estimate of how many turtles are expected to experience a take from that fishery. And if necessary, have reasonable and prudent measures to accompany that would minimize the impacts with implementing terms and conditions. So if it's found that there is no jeopardy, it's still required that the agency identify necessary and prudent measures that would minimize impacts on those species. So just to very quickly summarize what the incidental take statement of this biological opinion was, observer data was used and basically expanded over the entire fishery, and NIMS anticipates from this analysis that the fishery may result in the taking of 929 turtles, loggerhead turtles, and that's a biennial take, so about 465 annually, 1 leatherback turtle, 1 Kemp's Ridley, and 2 green sea turtles. For trawl gear in the scallop fishery, the estimate is that 154 takes will occur on loggerhead species, 1 leatherback, 1 Kemp's Ridley, and 1 green sea turtle. So this determination is required. This was the estimate from the biological opinion. And following that, it also included 5 reasonable and prudent measures. We'll call those RPMs. So as I explained, even though no jeopardy was found, these are still required. Most of them are focused on the information gathering or research needed that would provide future measures to continue to minimize takes. RPMs, it should be pointed out, are non-discretionary. They must be done, and it's necessary. However, they must be justified that they're necessary and appropriate to, in fact, minimize impacts on sea turtles. They're very long, and so I don't have them in slides, but if you open document 5 on page 4 of that document, you can see the 5 different RPMs that were written for this recent biological opinion. Many of them are the same as opinions that were in previous opinions. They kind of build up on some that are different. The main thing to keep in mind is that an RPM and the term and condition that's specified to implement that RPM, the main legal thing to keep in mind is that it cannot alter the basic design, location, scope, duration or timing of the action and may involve only minor changes when a no jeopardy finding is made. So this is something to definitely keep in mind, that the RPM and the conclusions from them are not supposed to kind of trigger any of these things when a no jeopardy finding is made. So in April, the agency sent the council a letter with the biological opinion attached that basically charged the council to develop the measures associated with the first RPM through Framework 21. And the first RPM is on the slide, and it's also on page 4 in that document. I'll just read it aloud. It's pretty short. That NIMS must limit the number of open area days at sea and number of allocated access area trips that can be used in the Mid-Atlantic waters within the action area during the months of June through October, or that would be a 5-month period, or May through November, a 7-month period. So this is the reasonable and prudent measure that was in the most recent opinion, and the agency has requested that the council basically develop measures to do this in Framework 21, which would be in place for fishing year 2010. As I said before, there were 4 other RPMs included as well, but again, their nature was much more related to research and gathering additional information to help further minimize impacts on turtles. The area that was defined as the Mid-Atlantic is this darker shaded portion, the top of, you can see the border there, what's considered the Mid-Atlantic. So some sort of effort limit is the focus of this RPM in that shaded region in the Mid-Atlantic. Now, the term and condition, as I said, is what is supposed to be the specific way that the agency intends to implement the RPM. And currently, the existing term and condition, as it's drafted in the opinion, says that no later than the 2010 scallop fishing year, NIMS must limit the number of open area days at sea and the number of access area trips in that area. And they provided 2 different options to consider. During the 5-month window, June through October, total open area days at sea and access area trips cannot exceed 50% of the average open area days at sea and access area trips used during that time period during the 4 baseline years. So essentially, during these 4 fishing years, a certain amount of effort occurred in that region during those months, and this would require reducing that by 50%, so that in 2010, essentially, you would not be able to allocate more than 50% of whatever that baseline amount was. The other option would be, during the longer period, 7-month window, you could not exceed 70% of the effort that occurred in that region. So essentially, that's a 30% reduction during the longer time window. So that's where the biological opinion basically left off. The agency sent us a letter to the council in April requesting that when we start working on Framework 21, we develop measures to specifically do this in that framework. So the PDT first met in June and reviewed the biological opinion. Several questions were raised about the opinion. There were some concerns about certain aspects of the analyses in the opinion, and also some background about where the RPM, this first RPM, kind of came from and how it was developed, and issues were raised and brought back to the committee. The agency sent the council a second letter in August, clarifying some of these issues and concerns that were raised and explaining the regulatory guidance that the agency used to basically develop the RPM number 1. So, and it also included a description of how the agency considered what a more than minor impact would be, I'm sorry, a more than minor change in the fishery would be in when they were developing the term and condition. In that letter, NIMS specifically requested that the council conduct an analysis to first, A, determine whether the RPM and term and condition is in fact reasonable and prudent, and if it is not, identify what revisions are necessary and identify why there is no acceptable revision if, in fact, that's what the council finds. So the central things that kind of focused this whole conversation and what we went around and around with in all these different meetings was what is reasonable and prudent and what defines more than a minor change in the fishery. Neither of these things are, well, jumping ahead. So those were the main things that we had to wrestle with. So the committee sent this to the PDT. The PDT analyzed basically figuring out whether or not this is reasonable and prudent, and we did it in two different ways. In the second letter from the agency, they explained a threshold in that letter that was used in first developing the RPM that was in the biological opinion. And what it said basically is that if each vessel could not be given one access area trip during those time windows, that would be considered more than a minor change. So if each vessel was not given at least one, that would be the threshold for being more than a minor change in that particular instance. So what the PDT did with that information was go back during 2004 through 2007, pull out the fishing effort data, and in fact see how much effort actually was used during those time windows, reduce it in half, reduce it by 30%, and see where things stood. And I'll explain that in the next few slides. Just to give you a sense of what we did, we also evaluated it a different way, not using that suggested threshold for more than minor, and instead we evaluated that a more than minor change in the fishery would be based on some overall fishing mortality increase that would be caused by shifting effort from one season when we know that yields are higher during the summer and shifting that effort out of that area or out of that season to a time when the meat yields are less. And some sort of effort shift imposed by this reasonable and prudent measure would in fact then be linked to an increase in F. So we also evaluated it that way. So I have a few slides about both of those approaches. So the first approach was to kind of stick with what the committee and council and PDT had been handed. And we looked at fishing effort analyses. VMS and VTR data was pulled from 2004 through 2007. The average days at sea and number of trips used during all those years were compared to the projections and what we think is going to be allocated in 2010. This is described in more detail in Table 1, page 11 of that main turtle document, but I also have the important information on this slide. So very quickly, for the shorter time window, for the mid-Atlantic access areas, if you add all the years together, it comes to 586 trips were taken by the limited access scallop fishery in all access areas during those months. If you average that over the 4 years, basically divide by four, you get 147 trips. The current RPM requires that be reduced by 50%. So the maximum amount that we could allocate the fishery would be 73 trips. In our analyses, we assume that there are 325 full-time equivalent vessels. There are actually slightly over 340 individual vessels, but they're in different permit classes. When you add them all together, essentially 325 vessels is the universe, full-time universe. So obviously 73 is less than 325, so there would not be enough trips for each vessel to get one during that five-month window. Same thing with the seven-month window. There's only 160 trips available for that, which is still about half of what we would need. So that's the access area side of things. The RPM also calls for a reduction in open area effort. The second letter we got from the agency did not provide the same suggestion or explanation of the threshold developed for open area days. So what we did is we used basically the same rationale, assuming that if they could, each vessel could have one open area trip during those time windows, then that would be considered not a major change, and so we evaluated that as well. So Table 2 in the main document describes this, but again, it's summarized on this slide. And if every vessel was restricted to one 10-day at sea trip during either time threshold, when you know that you have about 325 vessels, the requirement that you would need is roughly 3,250 days. And when you compare that to the averages from the baseline periods in the first row, this is actual effort that was taken, open area effort, in the mid-Atlantic during those years. The total for 8,250. I think I can use this. Oh, nope, can't. in the first row is where you have the total effort. And then you can see from the June through October period, that is reduced by about 42%. Long story short, for the shorter window, the current RPM would not provide at least one trip per vessel during that time period. It would, for the longer period, there would be, you'll see over here to the right, this isn't working for me, sorry, about 3,700 days at sea would be needed to work for that alternative, and in fact, that would probably provide enough days at sea for each vessel to receive one trip during that period. But when combined with the access area restriction, it doesn't work out. So the final conclusion, based on the fishing effort analyses, is on page 13 of the main document, and basically, based on the guidance in terms of more than minor having at least one access area trip per vessel, the PDT's conclusion is no, the existing term and condition is not reasonable and prudent when comparing it for this suggested guidance. So this was presented to the PDT on September 10th. The committee reviewed this analysis of fishing effort and requested that the PDT go back and explore a different way to define more than minor to further justify if, in fact, it's reasonable and prudent. And that is what we did. So between that time, we went brought it back to the PDT. This is just a reminder. Getting at this more than minor was definitely challenging. People had ideas, and we were trying to talk it through. But again, there really is no legal definition for more than minor, and not a whole lot of precedence in this type of thing. So what we kind of went around and discussed is that the main way that the scallop fishery is managed is under area rotation. And a substantial portion of the catch every year is allocated to a specific area and is assumed to be caught either spaced over that time of year or during different seasons, depending on when access areas open. There's a big spatial and temporal component to area rotation. Similarly, there's also a spatial component and seasonal component with the turtle issue in the mid-Atlantic. So we know that scallop yield varies during the year, and this was pretty much the main driver of the discussion at the PDT level, was we know the majority of the catch currently happens in the summer, particularly in the mid-Atlantic, and if you limit effort in that area and shift it to the other months or shift it to George's Bank, you're going to have a different impact on F. So the thought was that this is what should be the threshold for more than minor because it's linked to F, and it's linked to this effort shift issue. So in conclusion, the PDT basically came around and came to the end that if the RPM is found to cause effort shifts that have by more than a small amount, then overall F would increase. And this would have impacts on yield, landings, and revenue, thus more than a minor change for the fishery. We came to this, basically step one, as I was saying, was analyzing the effects of seasonal management on scallop meat weights. And we basically quantified the change in meat weight in the mid-Atlantic when you compare it to July when it's highest. We looked at observer data, looked at the meat weights from the survey, which is conducted in July, when the meat weights are highest, and compared that to observer data, where they collect meat weights throughout the year, throughout the fishery, and compared this change in meat weight by month, basically. And we expanded that to the amount of catch that has occurred by month for these different fishing years, 2001 through 2006. Again, long story short, based on this meat weight analysis by month, what we concluded is that yield, by shifting things from when we know it's at the highest meat weight yield to other times of the year, you're going to get a difference in yield of 5 to 10% based on when that effort is going to be shifted. Whether it's in November, December, January, it would vary upwards of 20. It could be as high as 20%, but also as low as 3%. But when you average that out with the catch distribution by month, you'll get basically a 5 to 10% impact on F. Excuse me. So we took that information and basically the step two was turning that into some sort of model that could help us estimate what the changes in fishing mortality would be caused by these different effort shifts from the RPM. And pretty much a glorified Excel spreadsheet was developed that would incorporate various assumptions. I'm not going to get into them today. We spent much more time with this at the committee level, where we made assumptions about different effort shifts and what kind of effects there would be on costs and prices and things like that, all together. And in the end, ultimately, the conclusion is we can see what the expected impact on F and catch and revenue would be from these different alternatives. And that's, so we, the first step was to assess the existing one to see what this model would assume. The summary of this information is in section 3.1.2.1 in the document, but appendix 2 is a much more detailed description of the model if I'm glossing over anything too much. Okay, so the assessment of the current term and condition, again, that's the one I described before about the 50% reduction or limit during that time of year alternative and the 30% limit. First, we assessed that alternative, and the conclusions for that are in section on page 16. For this presentation, I'm only going to tell you the conclusions for the June through October alternative just to save time, but the results for the May through November alternative are also described in the appendix. So, ultimately, the model estimates that with the June through October alternative, that is a 50% reduction of effort compared to the baseline during that window of time, this is estimating that there would be a shift of approximately 5,000 days at sea from one season to the other. That translates into about 19% of total effort, again, that's combining access areas and open area effort, to the other season. And I'm going to go through this in some tables after to hopefully clarify things. Ultimately, that's expected to impact overall F by about 0.015, which rounded is about 0.02. Again, just to remind you, the target for the scallop fishery is an F of 0.02. So again, this is overall F would be impacted by about that much. This is equivalent to about 10 million pounds. When you talk about 5,000 days, you're talking about taking 10 million pounds from one season and shifting it to the other one. We do assume that 100% of that catch is going to be compensated for and caught in the other season, and that is a pretty high estimate. We're calling that a best case scenario would be to assume that any of all the 10 million pounds would be able to be caught in the other season. We recognize that that is a high estimate, but that's why I have it described there as a best case. So under those assumptions, the model assumes that the fleet revenue would decline by about $6 million, and that's 1.7% of the total, and profits, once you reduce takeout crew income and things like that, you get to about $2.7 million or 2.7%. We also provided information, we're calling it Scenario 1, which is Table 6, which is kind of a more realistic description. The first one, the best case, assumes no changes in costs, no changes in prices of scallops by this shift of catch, which everyone probably recognizes is not completely realistic. So we did put in some, for the time being, assumptions about some of those things, and the impacts do increase by that because we assume that costs will go up having to fish in the winter, for example, compared to the summer. So very briefly, these tables just summarize what I just went through. On average, the historical average of catch during this five-month window, again, 54%, the majority of catch or half of the catch does happen during these 5 months historically. The status quo, what we think is going to happen in 2010, roughly 51% of total catch will happen in this season, pretty similar to the historical trend. But with this existing term and condition, the restriction would bring that to 32%. So that is what I kind of went through, that 19% of the total effort would be then shifted from one season to the rest. When you multiply a 19% shift by what we assume on average loss of yield would be 8%, as I was describing before from the meat weight analysis. When you multiply those together, that's where you get the change in F of 0.015. Excuse me. Very quickly, the same story for catch. Similar breakdowns in terms of the season and the landings. Again, you're talking about shifting and a you know, bringing it down to 33% would be caught during that season compared to 54%. So that's an overall loss of roughly 800,000 pounds. And what that number is coming from is from this meat weight loss that I was describing. That loss is what that's from. So this shift in landings, again, would be moving 22% of the landings from one season to the other. Just kind of trying to catch up here. This is a similar story in terms of revenue. I described this on the other slide. Again, when you have the best case scenario with no changes in price and no changes in costs, you would expect about a 1.7 decline in total revenue, which translates into a 2.7 decline in fleet profit. And the information on the bottom of that table is for that more realistic scenario that I was describing, but it is important to point out these things are very difficult to predict, fishing behavior and how prices and markets are going to adjust to this when you're talking about moving 10 million pounds from one season to the next. So again, the PDT would want to relook at these things, of course, in the framework when we look at this again. So overall PDT statements, ultimately after we finish these analyses from the few PDT meetings we've had on it, we came up with kind of seven overall feedback statements that we would bring forward to the committee. They are summarized on pages 21 through 24 of the document 5. I want to be clear, these are not consensus statements from the PDT. We have a pretty large PDT. People were not always at every meeting, so I don't want to present them as, you know, perfect worded consensus statements, but they definitely provide feedback from a lot of the participants on the PDT. And the first one, very quickly, if in fact the council decides to revisit the existing term and condition and RPM based on this information, the PDT was not supportive of using a baseline of years. If you remember, the term and condition currently in the opinion includes a comparison against 2004 to 2007 fishing years, and the PDT does not recommend that at all because of the nature of this fishery and allocations change so much from year to year and by area that would not be the most appropriate thing to do for this particular fishery. Furthermore, the PDT did not recommend restricting fishing effort in May and or November. Those are on the edges of this turtle window. There have been no documented turtle takes in either of these months from any of the observer data, from any of the years that we have. And based on some of the sea surface temperature information, the PDT would not really support any kind of limits of effort during those months, particularly when we know that would have greater impacts on the fishery in May, for example, when yields are higher. So number three is saying that the PDT was concluding that the existing term and condition is not reasonable and prudent based on the analysis I showed you on the fishing effort information based on the threshold provided in the agency letter. And also the existing term and condition should be kind of changed in terms of the more than minor threshold should be based instead on a percent change of effort shift and impacts on overall F compared to the other one presented. PDT wanted to be very clear that other factors were not lost in this process and they should be considered when deciding whether something's reasonable and prudent, and those things are things like safety, impacts on bycatch. When you're shifting effort from one time of the year to another time, we'll have different impacts on bycatch, and the impacts on revenue that I just described. So there were other things that definitely should be part of the mix in making this decision. Number five is that the RPM and term and condition should be replaced, was the recommendation to the committee. And six and seven are really just trying to describe that it is most appropriate to consider the details of this in a full framework process where we can analyze things. We know more about the upcoming fishing year's specifications, and we can get more input from the public, etc. So this all went to the committee on November 3rd. The committee input is on page 25. And again, the meeting summary that Sally was explaining is document number 4, has a lot more information in it. But in general, there were 5 motions passed by the SCOLLOP committee. In a nutshell, the first one is suggesting that the existing term and condition is not reasonable and prudent. The second motion is suggesting that the existing RPM be replaced with language that's provided on page 25. Again, the next motion would be a suggestion to replace the term and condition. And the last two motions are a suggestion to add additional terms and conditions to the biological opinion that are not currently there. This is the text of the new RPM. I won't really read through it. It's there for you to read. I think it's important to point out that this RPM still captures the intent, I would say, of the existing one in that it's still spatial, it's still temporal in nature. It does provide more flexibility than the existing language, and the focus of limiting effort is still implied by this new language. The suggested language for the term and condition, again, just pointing out that it still is explicit that the intent is that these would be in place by 2010. It still describes the Mid-Atlantic area the same as the existing one. It just changes basically the, it's not as specific in that it basically implies that some sort of effort or limit or restriction should be considered and implemented, but it shall be limited to a level that will not result in more than a minor impact on F or the fishery. So it kind of provides more flexibility in terms of that. And again, the last two additional terms and conditions are provided. There's some input in the PDT, I'm sorry, the meeting summary from the committee meeting to explain why those were added. But again, they were kind of ideas to increase awareness and recognition of some of the reductions in F that have occurred in the fishery already, and then to further enforce that using area rotation for turtles could end up being a win-win situation where we continue to identify areas that have higher catch per unit effort and put effort in those areas, hopefully not overlapping with when turtles are in the area. That's all I have to kind of catch the council up to where the committee is, and as Sally mentioned, there are several motions related to it.
Okay, thanks, Dee. I don't know if it's appropriate, and if it's not, tell me and I'll rule myself out of order. But I just have a question. How many turtles are taken every year, not in the scallop fishery, but in general? Do we have that information?
In all fisheries in this region?
Yeah, not just in this region, in the range of the turtles.
I don't know that. I'm not sure if anybody in the audience can help me with that.
Ron, do you know the number? Thank you. Deirdre?
I just want to clarify, I would never say that whatever Ron said is not correct, but I think the number is an estimated value of takes, not an actual observed take. They do expand it on to all the other, those are not observed takes. 300,000 are not observed. That's what's estimated in all the fisheries together. If that's even right, I'm not sure, but.
I was just trying to figure out where this situation fits in the universe of turtle takes. So, okay, hold on a second. Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deirdre went through the last few slides that she had included five motions that the committee has related to this, and I'll offer each in succession. They all passed the committee by a vote of 7-0 with one abstention. I'll offer the first motion on behalf of the committee. The committee finds the first term and condition of the biological opinion is not reasonable and prudent because it would cause more than a minor change in the fishery in terms of shifts in effort with adverse impact to yield, fishing mortality, landings, and potential safety at sea in the scallop fishery. I believe that concludes the motion, and rather than go through this again, I would leave the justification largely to the explanation that Deirdre gave. The committee did have an extensive discussion on this issue before this motion and the ones that will follow were offered.
Yeah, it's a committee motion, no second required. Council? Jim Oblin.
Yeah, I support the motion, and I just want to put out that, you know, I think I understand that this these extrapolations and projections of loss are quite, how should I say, you put them together fairly rapidly, and that if it was at a full framework, you'd look into that in more detail, because I think they're understating the loss, that if you move the fisheries into a different time of year, you don't have anything in there for lost fishing time, bad weather, lost productivity because of that. So I think that would be another significant number. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. As you might expect, we disagree with this motion and the finding that this is more than a minor change in the fishery. And looking at a bunch of the metrics by which this is judged, we're finding that the past behavior of this fishery is there are natural fluctuations. As Framework 19 said, this is a highly variable fishery. And actually, as this analysis went through with the PDT, it was really tough for them to do the analysis because it's such a highly variable fishery. For example, there have been year-to-year changes in revenue on the order of $100 million, and that was in the past 5 years. Year-to-year changes in F of 0.35. So that puts this in perspective, that this may be a minor change in fishing mortality. Changes in landings on the order of 2.2 million pounds. So the changes that Deirdre laid out seem fairly minor compared to those changes. And those are just year-to-year changes. Looking through the draft document, page 11, it looks at the projected landings and the actual landings in this fishery, the table at the top, table number 2. And I know that there's some disagreement looking at the past history of this fishery because it has changed and gone to a rotational management scheme. But if you look at the landings for 2007, the difference between projected landings and actual landings was 28%. That's a significant change. So any projections that we're comparing this to need to be looked at on did this fishery hit its mark? And a 28% change. The year before that, it was 5% less than what was projected. If you look at the year before that, it was 2%, a 2% difference. So it's a highly variable fishery, and minor changes are part of the game in this fishery. It goes up and it goes down, and landings don't always meet the projections. So we're looking at changes on the order of, let's see, for revenue, a 5% reduction, an 8% reduction in profit, a 1.7% reduction in landings. These seem to be fairly minor compared to the natural fluctuations in this fishery. And I think that if this council is going to move forward on this, there needs to be a really clear discussion of what thresholds were used to make the determination of what's minor. It needs to be very clearly laid out. I was at the PDT meetings and I was at the committee meetings, and it seems as though the thresholds for yield or fishing mortality or landings weren't laid out very clearly. And so if the council is going to move forward with this, changing a biop is a significant thing. And if the council is going to move forward with this one, it needs to be clearly laid out and justified how this is more than a minor change. At what level does a change, say, in F become more than minor? And it's got to be laid out and got to pass the test with the agency. Because when you're looking at a biop, we're looking at also the incidental take statement that goes along with the fishery. And if that ITS is not intact, this fishery has really serious problems. because every take then becomes an infraction under the ESA. And that's something that I don't think anybody wants to deal with. I think we want to keep this biop intact, let the ITS stand so this fishery can continue to operate. But it needs to have a strong biop, and it needs to continue. We believe that the measures that were laid out in the RPMs and the terms and conditions are less than are minor changes to this fishery and within the scope of the natural fluctuations. Thanks very much. I hope you'll oppose this motion.
Drew.
Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. I don't think it'll be a surprise to any of you that I will disagree with everything that Gib just said. The fact is, what was proposed by the agency, by their own determination, was a more than minor change. I refer you to the August 1 memo, I believe it was, that was sent out by the regional administrator that laid out an analysis done by the agency that said, if the proposed term and condition results in less than one trip in the area per vessel per access area trips, or less than a trip, you know, the days at sea, 10 days trip, is a more than a minor change. The PDT did the analysis, found that it did in fact lead to less than a trip per vessel, therefore it is more than a minor change. So the regulation that NIMS proposed violated their own analysis. I would also strongly disagree with that. There isn't a laid out discussion about what is minor and what are the triggers. We've had three committee meetings on this. We've had discussions at the council level. I mean, we've talked about the total buyout more than we've talked about any other aspect of scallop management this entire year. So the suggestion that there hasn't been adequate conversation on this is just, I find it hard to take that as being true. Fact is, you know, the chairman asked a very important question right after Deirdre's presentation. This is a fishery that's responsible for a fraction of the turtle takes. That's not mortality, mind you, that's takes. The shrimp fishery, for example, takes in the thousands and has mortalities in the thousands. The shrimp fishery, as part of its terms and condition, has what are called, you know, turtle excluder devices. Okay, let's be very clear about this. When a turtle goes into a net and goes through a turtle excluder device, it's still a take. It's just they've taken a measure to reduce the impact of that take. There are no, and I repeat, no time area restrictions on this fishery that has an order of magnitude more takes than the scallop fishery. There are no time area restrictions. So now you have NIMS coming out with their proposal that they clearly did not analyze because it violated their own analysis of what was more than minor. They're not allowed to require anything that's more than minor by the regulations because there is no jeopardy in this fishery. And then you have them putting on time area restrictions on a fishery that is just a fraction of the problem. It doesn't make any sense. And this is a fishery that's successful. They're looking to increase fishing effort through this action by putting this fleet on lower yield scallops when after they spawned out. They're looking to force them to fish in winter in violation of National Standard 10, which says to look at safety of life at sea. I mean, what's going on here? You know, so we support this motion in the sense that it says that the proposed term is not reasonable, but what we would really like this council to do is say it's not reasonable to put any time area restriction on a fishery that doesn't have anywhere near the impact of other fisheries where they don't have time area restrictions. We have turtle chains in place that were required by the agency that have reduced the impact of takes on turtles. They no longer are going into the bag, which all NIMS data shows is the number one leading cause of mortality in this fishery is when the turtle goes into the bag. When you have conforming turtle chains on a dredge, there is not one documented case of a turtle being in a bag with the turtle chains that are conforming to the regulations. Not one documented case. So the number one leading cause of mortality, according to NIMS, no longer exists. We've reduced the impact of takes. There is no need for these time area restrictions. Thank you.
All right, back to the council. Dave Gaethel.
Some questions for the staff, if I might, Chair, just so I can help understand the issues here a little better. First, a take is not a kill, right? A take is just any interaction with a dredge. I mean, if one's riding shotgun when it comes out of the water, that's a take. Is that correct? Okay. Second, was this biop, the years it runs through, is it's completed prior to the introduction of the turtle chains?
The years you mean is that the data that was used to estimate the number of takes was 2003 and 2004 before the use
so
of the turtle chain.
So that's prior to the use of the turtle chain. So the results of current practices are probably vastly different than this biop. Is that correct?
It was discussed a lot. As Drew was just mentioning, yes, the mortality is expected to decline with turtle takes, but in terms of it reducing the actual interaction with the gear and then hopefully being pushed up over the gear would still probably be around the same.
So, it still counts as a take. I'm interested in mortality. This whole idea
they
of
are
takes
unable
to me
to
is a fraud.
Right. They are unable to quantify what the benefit of the turtle chain is at this point, so those years were not used. They still would be counted as a take. It's implied in the biological opinion that the mortality will decline with the use of the chain, but that cannot be quantified at this time.
Okay, my last question is, if we do not take the suite of measures here that have been recommended by the committee, does that de facto force the fishery into the winter months? Would that de facto force it into the winter months if we don't take the recommendations of the committee?
I think if nothing happens at this meeting, then the biological opinion stands, and in Framework 21, the council will have to develop measures that meet the current term and condition as written.
Okay.
So, yes, but we wouldn't have to do it. You know, the agency wouldn't be doing it. We'd be doing it in the framework.
Okay. Well, I mean, that is very much a major concern to me. I mean, you know, these appear to be virtual turtles, a lot of them. But the people, if we put people out there in the dead of winter to fish, those are going to be real people that drown. They're not going to be virtual turtles.
Anyone else in the council? Okay. You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Four opposed. Abstentions? Two abstentions. The motion carries 14-0. Two abstentions. Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A second committee motion that will be on the board shortly reads, and this is with respect to the existing reasonable and prudent measure in the biological opinion, and the committee offered a motion to replace the existing reasonable and prudent measure with the following, that NIMS must limit the amount of allocated scallop fishing effort and or its impacts on sea turtles that can be used in the area and during the time of year when sea turtle distribution overlaps with scallop fishing activity.
Committee motion does not require a second. Discussion.
If I could just offer just a brief orientation for the council on this. If you want to look at the existing reasonable and prudent measure, that is, again, as Deirdre pointed out, document 5, page 4 and 5. The motion on the board would replace the existing first reasonable and prudent measure with a more general sense of what needs to be done to mitigate the impacts of the fishery on sea turtles in terms of the amount of effort rather than strictly the number of trips or days allocated.
Council. Anyone in the audience? Ron? The microphone this time. Okay, Ron.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. We don't like this motion either. It's really not reasonable to cut effort. The way we've been managing this fishery is high catch per unit effort, That's how we address our issues relative to bycatch, carbon footprint, habitat, and protected species. There's no need to do this. We have four other reasonable and prudent measures, which are very similar to the type that we've been operating under over the last 4 years: research, understanding the problem, and addressing it in a reasonable fashion. Out of that have come turtle chains. While NIMS has not quantified the benefit of turtle chains, I'm pretty sure we're going to find out it's probably reduced serious injury and mortality by 80% when the data comes in. If you looked at the takes in 2005, it was zero. 2006, the observed take was one. And we're talking observer coverage on the order of 5%. In 2007, when we had a tremendous increase in scallop effort, we had observer coverage between 5 and 20%. We had four observed takes, two in non-conforming gear, and two on top of the dredges. If you multiply that out in a very crude fashion using the lower observer number, you're talking a total of 80 observed takes, way down from anything in the past, in 2003 and 2004. 2008, two observed takes on top of dredges. We've solved the problem. We just haven't caught up and quantified it, but the problem has been remedied. Any idea to start shifting effort, trees? We haven't talked about the impact on fluke moving effort from the scallop fishery in the summer to a winter fishery. So what this does is this still goes with the general idea that we have to shift effort on some basis other than high catch per unit effort in the target fishery. That's a bad precedent. And the reason I say precedent is when we start examining mid-Atlantic trawl fisheries, we're going to find out that their problem, their take rates, are significantly higher than in the dredge fishery. Are you going to start switching the effort in the summer flounder fishery, in the squid mackerel butterfish fishery? That's what the precedent is that you're setting here. Nowhere else have they done this. I advise the council, please, don't start switching effort over a non-problem. Thank you.
Gibb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. Oceana supports time area management to reduce the interaction between turtles and fishing gear. Just as a general approach, time area management is makes good sense to reduce the takes. I know that the emphasis is on lethal takes, but the responsibility of the managers is to reduce all takes. So reducing the interaction between the gear is the common sense way to go on this one. Our concern on this motion in particular is that it doesn't have any measures, any backbone to it. It says that it will reduce, but to what extent will it reduce this? And I think that it needs to be amended to have some benchmarks that are attached to it. Our other concern on this is this kind of action, consultation on a BIOP, is unprecedented. We've gone through all of the years since the ESA was enacted and can't find a spot where a council was brought in for consultation on management measures. This is uncharted territory, and again, it may risk the ITS that goes for this fishery. So as the council moves forward on this one, if you choose to move forward on this one, we hope that it will have some measures that will ensure that it's effective, something to measure it against, and that it will be analyzed against what was in the original BIOP. To borrow a phrase from, I guess, another FMP, that it's conservationally equivalent, that when we go back to the effects on the turtles, that it's the same as what was laid out in the BIOP, and that if it doesn't meet that standard, it needs to be improved so that the effect for the turtles is the same. We hope that the council moves forward very carefully on this one, because we believe that this is risking the ITS, and the without a BIOP, that this fishery is in jeopardy until there is a standing BIOP. Thanks very much.
Drew.
Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. Let's just be very clear about what the legal standard is that is before you. It is not to minimize takes. It is to minimize the impact of takes.
That's what the law says. Clear, unambiguous, clearly stated in the law. Reduce the impact of takes, not reduce takes. So by using turtle chains, by eliminating the number one source of mortality, you have done it right there, okay? And as far as jeopardizing, you know, incidental take statement, that is not an issue here. That's not something for you to be concerned about. That is more bluster to try and, when you don't have the facts, you go with bluster. Fact is, there's no need for time area restrictions in this fishery, as been stated, obviously. The biop has shown, you know, they left the 2005 data out because it said zero. The numbers are statistically biased high. It was not a scientific reason to leave the 2005 data out. So you have statistically biased high numbers that still show this fishery is a fraction of the issue at hand, and then the number one leading cause of mortality has been addressed. Once again, there's just no need to move fishery into lower catch per unit effort in this fishery. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow the progression of the motions and what we can anticipate after this one, and it seems to me that this particular motion is linked to at least the next two that come up because it relates to fishing effort limitations. So that's my question. That do we have to adopt this motion in order for the logic to follow for us to then consider the other motions? Seems to me that that is the case. And if that is the case, then I suggest we adopt this motion and then proceed to the next. So if we don't adopt this one, do we shortstop the rest? Do the rest fall by the wayside? Seems to me they do, but I could be wrong. I'm not on the committee.
Well, there's certainly a logical progression that the committee tried to follow, and the next three motions, in fact, are related to modifications to the, and additions to the terms and conditions related to this, which are related to this motion. They're all interrelated.
Anyone else on the council? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Ten opposed. Four opposed. Abstentions. Two abstentions. The motion carries 10. What did I say? 10-2-2. 10-4-2. 10-4-2. Sally.
The next committee motion, as I just mentioned, is a suggested replacement to the first term and condition. With what is in the biological opinion that was drafted by National Marine Fisheries Service. And the committee suggested the following to replace that first term and condition, that no later than 2010, National Marine Fisheries Service must limit the amount of allocated limited access scallop fishing effort that can be used in waters south of the northern boundaries of the following statistical areas during the periods in which turtle takes have occurred. Restrictions on fishing effort described above shall be limited to a level that will not result in more than a minor impact on fishing mortality or the fishery. And that is a committee motion, and I'll offer some justification. So this is, again, using the definition. The committee was working from the new definition of more than minor, using changes in fishing mortality and changes in the percent changes in the effort shift. There was extensive debate during the formal committee proceedings, but there was wordsmithing with National Marine Fisheries Service to get this to a point where, and obviously they are not going to vote for this since this is an action that they have to take, but there was extensive work with the agency on this during the committee during the committee meeting. Thank you.
Council. One on the council. Dr. Pierce.
Okay, and again, I'm trying to navigate through these. The motion we just passed basically gives us a choice, well, NIMS a choice. NIMS must limit the amount of allocated scallop fishing effort and its impacts, or its impacts. So it suggests that one way to proceed would not be to change the effort, but to actually somehow deal with that impact, we deal with that effort and reduce the impact. So with that said, this particular motion focuses only on effort, correct? About limiting the amount of effort in the area and the periods. And I don't see any other motions that relate to anything else besides limiting effort. If that's the committee's intent, okay, fine enough. But again, I'm just trying to navigate my way through all of these. It seems like they all relate specifically to effort, but they are linked to the minor change. Well, some of them are linked to the minor change in the fishery. So that seems to be the key phrase, correct? Is that really the key element of all of these particular motions? This one in particular, that we always come down to that qualifier and or cause more than a minor change to the fishery? Seems that's the case.
It is, and because this has become so complicated, we opted to present these motions in succession rather than all together. Motion number 5 from document 4, the committee meeting summary, is related to the expressed desire by the committee to look at what impact the changes in the fishery that occurred from further back than what the biological opinion suggested, but to look back to 2003 and consider changes that have happened in the fishery since then, which obviously is the implementation of rotational area management. So yes, it's largely related to effort, but obviously as effort impacts sea turtles, and in that motion number 5, which will come shortly, that's related to the increased catch per unit effort and related decreasing potential interactions with sea turtles.
Deirdre.
I think I might be able to help David. Some of your confusion may be understanding better the relationship between an RPM and a term and condition. They are not the same, and the RPM is kind of the more general, this is the intent of what the measure is, whereas the term and condition that comes later is the more specific, you know, by 2010 in this certain area and so forth. So they're definitely linked, and one is supposed to be the implementing measure of the other.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Pierce raises a good point on the previous motion, namely the additive language that was there about or its impacts. And realizing that this biop could be in place for years until we have a new one, the committee in making that motion left open the possibility that there could be other ways to mitigate impacts, not just through reducing effort. And one of the other TNCs or RPMs in the original biop calls for research on gear, and that's not before us today. That's already in the biop. So I think those things fit together. But the important issue here is that while we have constraints on effort contemplated in the first part of the motion, the second part of the motion constrains it as required by the law such that it is, in fact, not more than minor in its impacts.
Thank you. Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Dan?
Thank you. I just wanted to point out again that the impact of the changes that have happened so far that maybe are not being thought about fully. In 1978, 1980, 1989, when we were fishing about 240 days a year. In the Middle Atlantic, when we were fishing, people were fishing 20 hours bottom time, dredges at least. in terms of towing and hauling back. Working the closed areas with rotational management, we're working often, you know, 4 or 5 hours or less per day of bottom time. That the significant reduction in terms of that has not really been thought about in terms of what is our base period we're looking at in terms of mitigation or reduction of impact on turtles. Obviously, you know, the industry's concern is that, you know, we look, what slice of time are we looking at? If we use as our baseline just the few years they're talking about, 2003, 2004, and ignore actually the data from 2005 and 2006 when we had much reduction, that is the concern of the industry, that we're actually, in effect, the BIOP itself has uniquely looked at a small period of time, and in that period of time has ignored both what was much worse fishing efforts in the past and much more impacts in the past, and has ignored also the improvements since then. The impacts of what you're doing today, I think, is significant because it's really helping to underscore that the BIOP should be really based upon a full analysis, both of where we used to be in the past and where what we've achieved today. The BIOP itself is a small snapshot that's really imperfect. And if we were to act upon that imperfect BIOP today, we'd significantly impact negatively this industry. So I think the direction the committee is going, the council is going today, and the committee went, is a very good idea. I just wanted to support you. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Eleven. Opposed? Four in opposition. Abstentions? One abstention. 11-4-1. Sally?
The next motion is the committee discussed new terms and conditions for National Marine Fisheries Service to consider adding to the biological opinion. This motion is the first of those new terms and conditions that the committee agreed to submit to the council, and that is that NIMS must review data with respect to scallop distribution and abundance to identify areas of high abundance, and in consultation with New England Fishery Management Council, identify areas for new rotational access areas to increase the catch per unit of effort in the scallop fishery during seasons when the scallop fishery and sea turtles overlap. That's a committee motion. And to clarify, this motion emphasizes the benefit from the rotational management scheme. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Committee motion. Discussion from the council. Dave Gaethel.
I guess my first question would be, what happens if they can't identify areas that have higher abundance, or, you know, basically they can't satisfy the terms of the motion if we voted it? What happens then?
Well, the committee has heard preliminarily, at least, that there are areas, especially Great South Channel, that might be appropriate for additional rotational area management designation. So at least in the short term, it's not something that's been official from the Northeast Science Center, but that's been a discussion that happened not at the last committee meeting, but the one prior, that there may be additional areas that are appropriate for rotational area management. So that's what's on the table now. That doesn't quite answer the question, but just gives you the context that the committee is working in right now.
Okay, and it's also specific to, even if you identify areas of scallops, let's use the Great South Channel as an example. If I'm a boat sailing from Virginia and now I got to sail to the Great South Channel, I still have an economic loss because I got to pay for all that fuel to get there. So, I mean, it's strictly on the biology of the scallops. It's not about the whole package, you know, how it relates to individual vessels and where they got to come from and whatnot. I'm just curious. I'm just asking because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember if that was part of the discussion. If there's another committee member who does, I'd appreciate that input.
Mary Beth.
There was some discussion throughout the day about some of these impacts by region. The PDT had quite a lot of work to do to just get the analysis done that they presented, excuse me, and they didn't have time to go into that depth. They acknowledged that, yes, there will be regional impacts, and certainly if we move forward in a framework, that they'll need to be looked at. But to date, they did not have time.
Pat Kirkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to provide all my comments, with your indulgence, provide all my comments at this point, sort of a general comment, a comment on this motion, and a comment on the next motion, since they're all related. As a general comment, I appreciate the hard work of the committee and the council on this. This is, as we all know, a difficult issue, and I know that a lot of time was spent on it that the council hadn't been planning on, and so I do appreciate that. These are, of course, recommendations to us, and when we get the recommendations, we will need to decide if and how to make any changes to the biological opinion as a result of those recommendations. Those are sort of my general comments. On this motion in particular, this doesn't make any sense to me. This isn't part of a biological opinion. This is part of what the council does through their rotational area management of scallops. And so I would certainly encourage us to look and see if there are other areas we should consider closing, but that wouldn't be done through a biological opinion. And a very similar comment on the next motion, that's not something that would happen through a biological opinion. So I would encourage the council to make the recommendations that they've made and not get too far afield here.
Mary Beth.
One of the difficulties that the committee faced was that the analysis of the current opinion is more than a minor change to the fishery. So if that's more than a minor change to the fishery, what kind of recommendations could the council make to the service to allow for this biological opinion to move forward? And we do understand that they are just recommendations. The one thing about motion four is that it interacts with motion three. And motion three says that the agency must limit effort for the overlap of scallop fishing with sea turtles. And motion four provides an avenue to mitigate those measures so that the agency could do that without making a major change to the fishery. So it's really more of the interaction of the two, even though they are separate motions. That was the intent of the committee.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Is that you, Drew? Maybe you could just keep a seat warm for you up here in the front.
No worries. Or I could kick the chair, either way. But Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund, strongly support this motion. The rationale behind this is what the agency's trying to do here. You have, it's basically the fisheries getting whipsawed between habitat closures in the north and turtle restrictions to the south. So they're saying, you know, we have more effort in the mid-Atlantic now, and there's more open area days at sea in the mid-Atlantic now. You know, if you look at the framework 21 analysis, what is it, Deirdre, about 75% of the days at sea are expected to be taken in the mid-Atlantic?
Originally, when we had all the access areas together, it's not quite as high anymore. Half.
Over half of the days at sea are expected to be taken in the mid-Atlantic, and that's because there's no open bottom to be fished on Georgia's bank, or there's a lot less than the mid-Atlantic because of habitat closures. As it stands right now, 20% of the scallop resource is tied up in habitat closures. So to answer Dave Gaethel's point, yes, there are plenty of areas where there's high abundance of scallops, and it's just a matter of whether or not you want to allow the scallopers access to those scallops. So then you're being forced down to the south, and then they're forcing you up north, and so where are they going to fish at the end of the day? That's the issue this is trying to address. You know, are we going to protect turtles, or are we going to protect rocks? What are we going to do? Or are we going to actually allow it to have high catch per unit effort, reduce bottom time? And I find the regional administrator's comments at the end there interesting in that
it's appropriate for a biological opinion to tell the scallop fishery where and when it can fish, but it's not appropriate for a biological opinion to say you can look at other areas to fish. I mean, it's just not consistent. This is wholly consistent with a holistic approach of trying to manage this fishery properly, trying to manage this fishery so you increase catch per unit effort. And when you increase catch per unit effort, you decrease takes, you decrease habitat impact, you decrease everything, and you increase yield. It's that simple. Thank you.
Sally.
Yeah, just to clarify, and this is in the committee meeting notes, the intent of the committee was not to address or have an impact on changing the currently designated or soon to be modified habitat closed areas that'll come out of the omnibus habitat amendment. That was clearly and expressed not the intent of the committee in making this motion, but to look at areas where scallop abundances are high outside of the any habitat closed areas that are designated now or may be modified in the future. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. Anything further from council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. I think I had 13. Opposed? 3. Motion carries 13-3. Sally?
Next motion is another new term and condition that the committee is suggesting, and that is that National Marine Fisheries Service must also investigate and quantify reductions in fishing effort in the Mid-Atlantic during the June through October time period using 2003 as the baseline that has already resulted from implementation of Amendment 10 and Amendment 11. And again, this is looking at the impacts of changes to management earlier than the proposed baseline period in the biological opinion to include before and after the shift to rotational area management.
Discussion on committee motion. Anyone in the audience? Drew?
Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Just to give you background on this motion, in the biological opinion, what hasn't been discussed is that the overall take assumption is for both the limited access general category, or the general category fishery, and the limited access fishery. However, the RPMs and the terms and conditions only apply to the limited access fishery. And the rationale given in the biological opinion is because of the changes in management by Amendment 11, there's such a reduction in general category fishing from what it was happening in these years that there's no need to do any additional measures to reduce takes or reduce the impact of takes. However, what was found out that DeVore Hart and his scientists did an analysis, and as a result of the Amendment 10 measures that affected management of the limited access fishery, there's been a 50% reduction in swept area because of rotational management during this time that was not, and I repeat, not put into the analysis of biological opinion. So on one hand, you have one part of the industry getting credit for management measures and reducing effort, and then you have another not getting credit for that same exact kind of management measures and reducing effort, which is wholly inconsistent, and that's what this amendment, this motion is to address. So we strongly support this, and you know, once again, to the regional administrator's comments saying this is not something you do in biological opinion. No, it's not something you normally do in the term and condition. No, you usually do it in the analysis when you find the term and condition. Unfortunately, that wasn't done. And so the council should make a statement here that this needs to be analyzed because, in fact, there has been a significant reduction in effort due to the management measures you have taken to, once again, increase catch unit effort. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gib Brogan with Oceana. This is getting close to requesting reinitiation of consultation. This is saying that there is new information available about this fishery that was not reflected in the previous biological opinion. And
I believe that, I don't know, Gene or Pat can answer this, is that's the grounds, that's the standard for reinitiation of consultation under Section 7. So if there is a significant change in the fishery that wasn't reflected in the previous biological opinion, is that what the council's asking on this one? That this series of motions has made suggested significant changes to the biop and now is asking for new analysis of the fishery and its effect on turtles. It's getting very close to a request for reinitiation of consultation. We think that right now the way that this is going, that reinitiation may be the prudent way for the council to proceed. Thank you.
Back to the council. Anything further from the council? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen opposed. Two in opposition. Any abstentions? No. 13-2, zero abstentions. Motion carries. Sally?
That concludes the discussion on the biological opinion. The committee has one more motion to bring to the council, and that is described in document for the meeting summary on page 11. It's motion number 7. And the council will recall that at the October meeting, the council directed the committee to refine the list of alternatives in the draft amendment 15 to consider the shortening timeline for implementation, especially in light of the deadline for the new Magnuson requirements for catch limits and accountability measures. One item, as previously mentioned, that's already been moved to the considered and rejected section of the document is related to permit stacking. That's been removed already, and the committee discussed and provides a motion now to the council to remove the IFQ alternative from the document and move that to the considered and rejected section of the document. So I would move on behalf of the committee to recommend removing the IFQ program alternative for the limited access fishery to the considered and rejected section of Amendment 15. There was considerable discussion about this. A number of committee members expressed their opinion that the fishery is ripe for transition to an IFQ program because of benefits, not only in terms of compliance with the catch limit and accountability measure requirements in Magnuson, potential impacts in terms of increased catch per unit effort with respect to sea turtle interactions and the associated benefits to the fishery in terms of efficiency and profitability that an IFQ might yield. But the committee then discussed and acknowledged that there isn't sufficient consensus in the industry to pursue this, and that the two-thirds supermajority referendum requirement for New England ITQ fisheries may be too much of a barrier as of yet to pursue this without sufficient support from industry.
So that's a committee motion. Discussion from the council. To the motion on the board, anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 14 opposed. Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 14-0-1. Sally?
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. There was one additional motion that I did not offer. It was on page 9 of the committee meeting summary, motion number 6, and that's related to setting of catch limits and determining accountability measures for bycatch of groundfish in the scallop fishery, and the committee moved to direct the scallop PDT to work and coordinate with the groundfish PDT. So I don't offer that as for the full council consideration, since those two PDTs are working together to address that issue, and it'll come before the council at a later date.
So Dee and Tom are working together on this issue?
We will be.
Okay, Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to summarize then, based on our discussions this morning about priorities, that the first priority for the scallop committee would be to develop ACL and AMs. The second priority would be to ensure that Framework 21 is done this year. And the third priority would be to work on capacity reduction, days at sea leasing, transfers within the limited access fleet, a new overfishing definition, and open area trips. Is that how you view things, Dee? Unless they change something.
Yeah, I mean, except the first one is in Amendment 15, the second one's a separate action, and the third stuff is also in Amendment 15. So yeah, we will be taking a break in the work on Amendment 15 to do the framework, but that first priority item and the third one you were discussing would end up being in the same document altogether.
We had the discussion. Your number one priority for the committee is ACLs and AMs. The number two priority to make sure you get done and drop everything where you are is to get the spec package done. And number three, if you have time, include everything else in the amendment.
Got it. While I have the mic on, John, I just want to clarify for the record, for the turtle biological opinion, am I sending this to the agency? There wasn't really a motion in terms of direction. The agency requested a response from the council. Should we be just sending a cover letter with this document 5 and those motions? We'll just draft it in a letter and send it over? Okay.
Yeah. Sally?
I'll just make one more quick comment. The motion that I offered was the last motion that the committee considered. There was discussion as well on an alternative to convert open area days into access area trips, and especially in light of the discussion related to sea turtles, the committee decided to keep that that item in the document for development, recognizing that an expanded rotational area management program and the associated increased catch per unit effort results in, obviously, as I've said before, increased efficiency, increased profitability, increased predictability, decreased impacts on habitat, and decreased impacts on sea turtles. So for all of those reasons, the committee discussed and determined to leave that item in Amendment 15 for further development. And with that, that concludes my report.
Any other council member have an issue on scallop? Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on Sally's last point, the idea of converting open area days to access area trips certainly has some merits, and again, it did come up during the turtle discussion. Right now, your PDT is evaluating fishing power in the open area days so that we can have some sort of basis if stacking is developed as an option. And I just wonder if, and I guess it's a question for staff, really, if we can, as long as that analysis is being done, and if we're considering changing open area days to access area days, if we might develop an option that would somehow bring that to bear on that conversion so that there's a preservation of the economic character of the fishery. Because right now, that's where all the variation is economically in the fisheries, obviously, in the open area days.
Yes, the work we do for the fishing power alternatives, for the current stacking and leasing alternatives, we could use some of that same information for this conversion of open area days into access area days. There are other things that would need to be developed, and the PDT hasn't worked on this alternative yet, but now that we have direction from the committee and the full council that people want to leave it in the document for development, we will work on that after ACLs.
Anything else from the council member? Okay. We've still got some time left on the agenda. As I said, we're going to get out of here by 5 o'clock. However, there is an issue I'd like. I know there's people in the audience, I know, that are